Hello and welcome to Volume 46, Number 6 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 6th of February 2026. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Dusty, Margaret and Julie. And in the news this week, dogs on leads only in the market, more electric buses are planned, and to paraphrase Vera Lynn, wheels meet again in June. In Grapevine Extra this week, with two additional Vision Norfolk events to report, plus the ladies remembering shops full of sweet jars. First, though, we've got some birthdays. It's a busy week for birthdays, even ignoring mine on the 10th, as we send our best wishes to Andrew Harries for tomorrow, Saturday the 7th, to Sheila Felmingham for Monday the 9th, and not forgetting Barbara Balls for Wednesday the 11th. Have great days, all of you. Lots of birthdays there, and we also have loads of news this week. So, over to the ladies for the first batch of local stories.
Well, hello everybody. Again, it's news time. And I've got quite an exciting one to talk to you about for the first number, so here we go. The Wheels Festival 2026 has been announced. Death-defying motorbike stunts and car-crushing monster trucks are coming to Yarmouth Seafront for an action-packed weekend of entertainment. The Great Yarmouth Wheels Festival is roaring into town this summer with the two-day event taking over the seafront from June the 20th to the 21st. The fun-filled carnival of art cars will feature classic and contemporary vehicles, a wide range of bikes and superbikes, a monster truck duo, and daredevil stunt teams. Organised by Visit Great Yarmouth, the event, now in its 10th year, is free and open to the public. Last year's festival drew nearly 70,000 people to the seafront. Among this summer's highlights will be the UK's biggest monster truck, Big Pete, with racing rival teammate, oh my lord, the Grim Reaper. Oh, yeah. Nice. Big Pete, the only monster truck in the world, with a driver who commentates throughout the show as it rips cars in half and crushes them. And I see why it's called that then. Also on the bill is Bold Dog FMX, the UK's number one freestyle motocross stunt team. BMX Wizards, the BMXtras, will also host workshops throughout the weekend, inviting people to try the sport. Asa Morrison, chief executive of Visit Great Yarmouth, said, "These acts are worldwide and perform across the world. They will bring first-class entertainment throughout 2 days on the seafront. Beside the thrills and the spills of the acts, our visitors say that they enjoy chatting to the owners of the different vehicles that are so lovingly cared for, have been painstakingly restored, and are real labours of love for the people who proudly bring them to be part of our festival." Mr. Morrison also said that the festival brings an economic boost to traders, both along the seafront and in the town centre. This year, to make the event easier to navigate, the different types of vehicles will be organised into four distinct zones. Prizes for best in show and other awards are presented on both days to owners of the vehicles displayed. Well, there, That's an exciting thing to look forward to, isn't it?
Well, I think we should get ticket dust.
I like stunt watching stunts, but I don't know about I want to get near the Grim Reaper.
No, I don't think I'll bother with that. Okay, so it's Julie here. I've got Vision to Improve Norfolk Village Woodland. Sounds fun, doesn't it? So Reedham Parish Council has been awarded a £5,000 grant from Broadland District Council's Future for Nature Fund to support a woodland restoration project. The grant is supporting the first year of the Parish Council's Woodland Walk Restoration Project. Reedham Parish Council Clerk Stephanie Shackleton said, "There will be bramble removal and the removal of invasive species, and this is being done by conservation volunteers. We want to restore it to how it should be. It has been left overgrown and we want to restore it for the wildlife and make it a much nicer area for the local people. The woodland in Reedham is approximately 400 metres in length and is where a stretch of the railway line used to be. The management plan is intended to cover a timescale of 5 years until December 2030.
Well, hello, it's Margaret here. And I'm to tell you about a Yarmouth firm which sees pump sales soaring. A Norfolk manufacturer of equipment for the offshore oil and gas industry has reported doubling its sales and rentals of nitrogen pumps in the last year, leading to a 10% growth in its workforce. Prior Power Solutions in Great Yarmouth supplies high-calibre nitrogen pumps across the world, including to South America, West Africa and Australia. Nitrogen pumps are used in the oil and gas sectors to convert liquid nitrogen into high-pressure gaseous nitrogen and help keep wells flowing freely. James Ricks, Managing Director, said the introduction of the firm's rental business, launched with £1 million worth of investment, had been instrumental in the firm's recent success. The company now hopes to double the number of pumps available for rental in 2026, with a further £3.3 million of investment. The impact of our nitrogen pump rental offering has proven to be a genuine step change for the business, said Mr. Ricks. It has improved our margins and opened the door to repeat and long-term customer relationships. It demonstrates our ability to identify opportunities, invest decisively and execute effectively. Prior Power says it's now attracting more interest from energy companies based in the Far East, Central Asia and Eastern Europe. Adrian Sharman, sales director, added, "These are exciting times for us at Prior Power, and we're delighted to be flying the flag for UK industry in such a vital sector of world trade. We have a nitrogen pump in every continent except Asia, and we're confident we can break into that territory this year. All our rental nitrogen pumps are less than 2 years old. In a market where there's a lot of similarly priced products, is anywhere up to 15 years old. So we're offering good as new, state-of-the-art equipment at highly competitive rates, and with all the reassurance that comes from dealing directly with the original manufacturer who knows the product inside out."
A man was found by police with more than 2 kilograms of cannabis vacuum-packed in shopping bags, a court has been told. David Woodhouse, who claimed he had used cannabis to self-medicate for his anxiety issues, was found with 2.2 kilograms of cannabis with an estimated street value of £22,000 when police searched his home. Norwich Crown Court heard that police found the cannabis vacuum-packed in Bag for Life shopping bags at the 50-year-old's address. Jude Dewar, prosecuting, said, "It's clear that the cannabis had been the product of a fairly significant grow." The prosecutor said that the estimated wholesale value of the drugs was £11,890. In addition to the drugs, £14,820 in cash was found hidden in safes disguised as books. Mr. Dewar said Woodhouse played a significant role in the operation. The court heard after he was arrested on August the 3rd, 2022, that Woodhouse went on to tell probation officers the cannabis found at his address was to self-medicate for anxiety. Woodhouse of South Quay, Great Yarmouth, appeared at court on Tuesday, February the 3rd, for sentencing. It was after he previously admitted productions of cannabis. Rob Pollington, mitigating, said that Woodhouse has struggled with his misuse of cannabis. He also said that Woodhouse had self-medicated for significant issues with social anxiety by taking cannabis. But the barrister said that Woodhouse has now realised the offending, which took place more than 3 years ago, was foolhardy. Mr. Pollington said he had now been prescribed anti-anxiety medication and has moved away from cannabis. Recorder Nicola Fitches imposed a 22-week prison sentence, suspended for 6 months. Woodhouse was given credit for his guilty plea by Recorder Fitches, who also accepted the defendant had told probation he had been self-medicating for his anxiety.
A bid to transform an end of terrace house into a 3 one-bedroom flats has been refused. Planners rejected the application to convert and extend the property on Wellesley Road in Great Yarmouth. They said 1 ground-floor flat would be at unacceptable flood risk and another would suffer from an oppressive and unwelcoming living environment. The house sold last September for £165,000. There were 2 objections from members of the public who raised concerns about the overdevelopment of the road and loss of residential character.
Halvergate Parish Council is considering new safety measures to protect its war memorial after a sugar beet lorry ploughed into the nearby village sign. The collision in Halvergate and Tunstall knocked the sign to the ground, though no one was injured and the memorial itself was untouched. Parish Clerk Philip Stone, who attended the scene, said the driver was very compliant and the sign was reinstated within a week. The incident, which took place over Christmas, has prompted councillors to explore ways of shielding the cenotaph from any future crashes. Mr. Stone said, "We were just concerned that we needed to think about how we could protect the war memorial if there was another crash, and we're looking into that." The issue was discussed at the parish council meeting on January the 28th. The memorial stands beside a newer monument unveiled in 2023, which commemorates 17 airmen who died in 3 crashes on the surrounding marshland during the Second World War. In 2024, a woman was reported for careless driving after her car hit 2 brownies during a Remembrance Day service at the memorial.
A £1.3 million job shoring up a road with a history of sinking is expected to begin later this year. Norfolk County Council has confirmed that work on a 140-metre section of new sheet pile retaining wall along Riverside Road in Galston could start in the autumn. The authority is currently seeking for planning permission for the new wall from Great Yarmouth Borough Council. The application follows years of erosion and tidal wash that have steadily eaten away at the road's foundations. County Hall says the existing wall, which supports the road, has deteriorated so badly that part of it is considered beyond economic repair. Under their proposal, the new retaining wall would be constructed 1 metre in front of the old one, with the space between the two filled to stabilise the carriageway above. A 54-year-old living on the road said, "'Twill be much better once the new wall is built and the road is made safer." Riverside Road has been repeatedly closed over the years after sections of the surface gave way. In 2020, a 1 metre deep void opened up near Williamson's Lookout, and the following year, a 2-foot sinkhole appeared on the same stretch. Locals say that they often avoid the route, describing it as dangerous, and comparing the crumbling edges to cliff erosion. The project also includes plans for a reinforced concrete capping beam, a new parapet fence, extended drainage, and repairs to sections of road that have already collapsed. As some of the work will take place in the sea, the council has also applied for a marine licence from the Marine Management Organisation. The plans have already received a permit from the Environment Agency. An ecological appraisal carried out on behalf of the County Council concluded the riverside works would have only minor ecological impacts.
Play areas are to be revamped in parts of Norfolk as part of a 1.5 million project to boost pride in where people live. 5 children's play facilities are to be improved in the Great Yarmouth Borough, with 6 further projects also announced. The Town Board has identified 7 regeneration projects, which also include restoring Galston's Carnegie Clock and bringing 2 derelict cemetery lodges back into use. Great Yarmouth Borough Council was due to approve the schemes this week after they were identified by the committee. The board want to spend £350,000 on improving play areas at Blackfriars West and Fisher Avenue in Great Yarmouth, Mill Lane in Bradwell, Hemsby Playing Field and Martham Playing Field. Equipment will be refurbished or replaced through the work. The plans come as the condition of play areas have been criticised by Yarmouth Independent MP Rupert Lowe, who complained sites such as Martham and Flegborough currently have broken equipment. A spokesman for Great Yarmouth Borough Council said, "You may have noticed that some parks are currently fenced off. This follows our annual independent play inspections, which check equipment, safety, condition and life expectancy. Where concerns are identified, some pieces of equipment may be temporarily closed so that we can keep children safe while repairs, replacements and improvements are planned." The board also wants to spend £500,000 on supporting the regeneration of the Winter Gardens, Yarmouth, unique Victorian glasshouse on the seafront, which is currently undergoing a multi-million pound scheme to transform it into a community space. Peggotty Road Community Centre is also due to receive £200,000 to upgrade its facilities. Improvements will be made to St George's Park and Galston Cliffs to enhance the green spaces at a cost of £150,000. 2 cemetery lodges in Caister and Galston will also be restored and repurposed through a £200,000 pot, turning them into family homes. Galston's Carnegie Clock has been allocated £62,000 to restore it and relocate it in the town, following the demolition of the Carnegie Library. Finally, the Aspire Young Person Centre at the end of Market Row, which provides accommodation and services to young homeless people, will receive £80,000 to refurbish the building. At a cabinet meeting last week, councillors will consider approving the projects, which will also require an additional £42,000 to be funded by the council to complete them. The Pride in Place funding scheme will provide £20 million to Great Yarmouth Borough Council to make long-term improvements over the next 10 years.
The death of a young father who struggled with childhood trauma and the impact of sexual assault has been described as heartbreaking by those who were involved with his care. Aaron Chapman of Norman Lane, Great Yarmouth, was found dead at his home by a friend after his loved ones became concerned for his welfare in June last year. An inquest into the 24-year-old's death heard how Mr. Chapman had attended A&E at the James Paget Hospital on June the 23rd. Norfolk Coroner's Court was told that he had been behaving erratically and was talking to himself. However, when medical staff tried to find him, they could not, and he was deemed to have left the department. Days later, his body was found hanging at his home on June the 25th. Paramedics declared him dead at the scene. In a statement from Mr. Chapman's GP, it was heard that he had been diagnosed with ADHD and generalised anxiety disorder. Hannah Linfield, a senior mental health practitioner with the Norfolk and Suffolk NHS Foundation Trust, first saw Mr. Chapman in August 2023. She explained he was expressing thoughts of wanting to end his life due to the negative impact of the trauma he had experienced during childhood. She added, "Alongside this, there were difficulties surrounding the bereavement of his mother, who sadly ended her life a few years prior." He also spoke about some other traumatic events that had occurred in his life and made disclosures surrounding sexual assaults. "At the time of our appointment, he did not want to take this any further." Dr. Dawn Collins, a consultant psychologist with the East Community Youth Team based at Great Yarmouth's Northgate Hospital, began working with Mr. Chapman in July 2024. She described him as having significant trauma in his life, and that while his diagnosis of ADHD and medication to support him with his diagnosis meant he was doing really well, she advised he still needed therapy. "He'd been very clear he did not want to do therapeutic work, and I used to say to him it was the way forward, and he needed help with the trauma," she said. Finally, his former partner described to the court how his daily life consisted of constant rushing thoughts from every direction about everyone and everything around him. She said, "Aaron carried great shame and guilt for not always being able to see his child." Aaron also told me about two sexual assaults he'd been a victim of, one in 2020. "Both caused great distress. He would have regular panic attacks and would uncontrollably shake when near the area where it happened. He carried great disgust and shame of this happening." She added, "He will be missed wholeheartedly." Recording a conclusion of suicide, Area Coroner Johanna Thompson said Aaron Chapman sadly took his own life.
A medieval seaside ruin, long regarded as a place for quiet contemplation, is set to be lit and monitored by CCTV under a £22,000 scheme. St Margaret's ruined church, a 13th century structure in Hopton, will be connected to the electricity grid after Hopton Parish Council agreed in principle to the plans. The move follows a spate of antisocial behaviour nearly 3 years ago, when vandals dug lime mortar out of the walls and threw stones, some believed to be up to 1,000 years old, across the site. At the time, the parish council warned the Grade 2 listed ruins could face closure and said CCTV installation was being considered to help prevent further damage. A meeting held on January the 12th this year saw the parish council revisit those plans. Councillors discussed a quote of £9,862 from UK Power Networks to bring electricity from Watson Close and a separate bachelor electricity quote of £12,120 to cover lighting, CCTV and a spotlight within the ruins. The council agreed in principle to both and said it would notify the diocese and inform villagers with more details closer to the start date for the project. There has been a church on that site since at least the 11th century, although the surviving walls largely date from the late 13th to early 14th century. The churchyard was officially closed in 1966, and the site fell into ruin and became unstable. Hopton Parish Council bought the site from the church commissioners in 2008 for £1. In 2015, the walls of the old Grade 2 listed ruin were stabilised with assistance from the Great Yarmouth Preservation Trust, which organised Lottery Heritage funding for the project. In 2019, however, police were called after stones had been gouged out of graves. 1 month later, firefighters rushed to the church following reports that a vehicle was on fire under the building, and on that occasion, flames actually touched the building's wall.
Plans to accommodate more people at a former Norfolk hotel have been refused. Barrett Properties applied for planning permission to change the use of the 12-bedroom house of multiple occupation at 46 Queen's Road in Great Yarmouth into an 18-bedroom HMO, which I'm going to say from now on, which means house of multiple occupation, with a manager's flat. The proposal has been refused by Great Yarmouth Borough Council for a number of reasons. The Borough Council said that the plans, which included having a kitchen, dining room and living room in the basement, would discourage use of communal areas, reduce social interaction and create cramped, isolating, oppressive and substandard living conditions for residents. Plans to increase the number of people living in the building and have four bedrooms on the ground floor were also considered to pose an increased flood risk. In addition, the site lies within a habitat impact zone, with the council citing the proposed development's potential to result in significant impacts on designated ecological sites as a reason for refusal. The property, which previously operated as the Southern Hotel, had previously refused planning permission in October over its proposed internal layout to provide a 20-bedroom HMO.
The Time and Tide Museum has had a visitor surge. An exhibition about one of the world's most beloved bunnies has caught museum chiefs on the hop. Bosses at Great Yarmouth's Time and Tide Museum admitted the number of people heading to Miffy's 70th birthday exhibition has exceeded their expectations. They said 10,992 people had visited the museum, housed in a former fish curing works since the exhibition opened in October, an increase of 61% on the same period the previous year. About 60% of visitors had come specifically for the Miffy exposition, while also enjoying the rest of the museum, which includes displays about Yarmouth's herring industry and maritime history. Museum officials said a fifth of people were making return visits, and it was also appealing to young adults and students, perhaps fuelled by memories of reading the books as children. Miffy merchandise has also been flying off the shelves in the gift shop, with retail sales up to 488% compared to last year. Miffy products accounted for 35% of all sales across the Norfolk Museum's service sites. Andrew Smith, operations manager for the eastern area of Norfolk Museum Service, said, "It's been a real joy to celebrate Miffy's 70th birthday and to welcome so many visitors of all ages to Time and Tide Museum. It's been extremely popular with families, and we have also seen an increase in young people and students coming to the museum. We look forward to the last few weeks of the exhibition, which will hopefully see many more people visit us to enjoy it." Originally created on June the 21st, 1955, Dutch illustrator Dick Bruner first drew Miffy to entertain his young son. It led to a series of books, printed more than 85 million times and translated into more than 50 languages. And the exhibition features more than 50 screen print, films, manuscripts, pencil drawings, paintings and models, along with interactive installations. The exhibition continues until Sunday, March the 1st, for the final couple of weeks, from Saturday, February the 14th, admission prices will be cut by 15%.
Well, the ladies will be harking back to the days of the local sweet shops in Grapevine Extra. But before all that, and the second part of the main news, here is some news in brief.
A man who sustained a burn wound to his leg later died from septic shock, a court heard. Melvin Adams of Brasenose Avenue, Galston, died at the James Paget Hospital on January the 9th. An inquest opening at Norfolk Coroner's Court heard the 84-year-old's provisional cause of death was septic shock due to burn wound on right lower leg. The court was also told that he was a retired painter and decorator. A full inquest will take place on July the 12th. Local music fans will soon be able to see a Neil Diamond tribute show. Song Sung Blue, the music of Neil Diamond, comes to the Pavilion Theatre in Galston on Saturday, May the 23rd, 7:30, promising an evening of nostalgia and unforgettable music. Featuring a special anniversary show marking 60 years since Neil Diamond's first hit single, Song Sung Blue celebrates a six-decade career and an artist who has sold more than 130 million records. Audiences are invited to enjoy a hit-packed performance featuring classics such as Sweet Caroline, Crackin' Rosie, I'm a Believer and many more. Fronted by Stephen, a seasoned performer with more than 20 years of professional stage experience, the show captures Neil Diamond's voice, songwriting and stage presence. Backed by a powerhouse live band and backing singers, this production brings Diamond's music to life. Tickets are £22 and can be bought at paviliongalston.co.uk. I'll repeat that, paviliongalston.co.uk, as early booking is recommended.
Two teenagers have been arrested after electric bikes were stolen from a shed in Galston. The thefts happened on Wednesday, January the 28th, off Brasenose Avenue. In a statement posted on Facebook, Great Yarmouth Police said, "Police were called to the Middleton Gardens area of Galston after a member of the public reported seeing the stolen bikes. After attending, officers found two teenage boys nearby who were suspected of being involved. They were each arrested on suspicion of four offences: theft, burglary, going equipped to steal, and possession of cannabis. They were both taken to Great Yarmouth Police Station for questioning and later released on bail while the instigation continues. And now here's a treat. A Norfolk Broads pub has been chosen as one of the best in the country by experts. A selection of hospitality industry leaders and travel experts recommended some of their favourite venues for a new feature in the Daily Mail. Reedham Ferry Inn was mentioned by author and journalist Simon Barnes. This family-run pub sits beside the River Yare and serves a range of food from pub classics to a more refined evening menu. Mr. Barnes highlighted the fact that from the south it is only accessible by chain ferry. It can also be accessed by boat. Mr. Barnes described it as a real pub and said that Sydney, the chef, is the mistress of real pub grub. This is not the first time it has earned national praise, for in 2023, the Times named it as one of the best pubs in the UK for camping.
Britain's largest ever bird could make a remarkable return to the skies of Norfolk, with experts considering whether they could be introduced on the Broads. International conservationists have been assessing whether the country's waterways could support the return of the Dalmatian pelican. The huge birds with wingspans of up to 3.5 metres once lived in Norfolk, as evidenced by fossils. But they have been absent from the UK for centuries, driven out due to hunting and land being drained to create farmland. About half the 20,000 global population of the birds live in parts of southeastern Europe, but the Broads are being considered as a location for them to make their British comeback. Restore, a large-scale nature restoration company, has completed an initial phase of a feasibility study exploring whether the wetlands could one day support the return of the pelican. Travellers can now benefit from real-time bus updates as part of an ongoing programme to improve transport interrogation across the Greater Anglia network. A live bus departure screen has been installed at Great Yarmouth Railway Station to provide passengers with up-to-the-minute information on outward journeys. The display, jointly funded by Norfolk County Council using government funding to improve bus services across Norfolk, shows live updates including route numbers, destinations, departure stops and minute-by-minute countdowns. Scott Dolling, Partnerships Manager for Greater Anglia, said, "Great Yarmouth as a holiday destination sees many people visiting for the first time, so helping customers find their onward connections can be of great value. This screen also gives directions to the bus stop to make the connection even more seamless. Passenger groups and rail partnerships have welcomed the addition, which follows similar installations at stations in Norwich and Cambridge."
Police investigating the death of a 15-year-old in Norfolk after she took ecstasy say that they are waiting for the results of a toxicology report. Emergency services had been called to a residential address in Hopton, near Great Yarmouth, on January the 24th, following reports that the girl had become unwell. She was taken to the James Paget Hospital by ambulance, but died a short time later. Police had charged two 18-year-olds as a result of an investigation into her death: Kian Lockett, 18, of King Street, Great Yarmouth, and Nathan Lafitte, 18, of no fixed address. Both appeared at Norwich Magistrates Court charged with supplying MDMA and being concerned in the supply of the same MDMA following her death. Both have since been remanded in custody and will next appear before Norwich Crown Court on February the 25th. In an update, a spokeswoman from Norfolk Constabulary confirmed a Home Office post-mortem examination has taken place. Results are pending toxicology. The girl currently cannot be named due to a court order made at Norwich Magistrates Court when the two defendants appeared. The Bradwell Butchery Bakery and Delicatessen, along with the Bradwell Bowls Club, handed £1,026 to the East Anglian Air Ambulance Charity. The money was raised at the annual Trebles Bowls competition last summer. This event, which has run since 2010, has raised thousands of pounds for local charities over the years. Organised by the Bradwell Bowls Club, with Bradwell Butchery sponsoring the event, the competition attracts bowlers from across the county, along with more than 100 spectators each year. And at this event, Andrew, Zoe and Carl from the butchery ran an all-day barbecue, with all proceeds going to the chosen charity. And this year's Trebles Bowls competition is scheduled for Sunday, the 12th of July.
OK, it's time for the ladies to get you fully up to date with the rest of this week's local news.
A Norfolk man has pleaded guilty to attempting to engage in sexual communication with a child and attempting to meet a girl under 16 after grooming her. Kevin Woodhouse, 71, of Main Road in Filby, appeared at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court on Tuesday. He was charged with attempting to engage in sexual communication with a child and attempting to meet a girl under 16 following grooming. He pleaded guilty to both charges. The court heard how between August the 26th, 2024, and August the 29th, 2024, he intentionally attempted to communicate with a girl under 16 for the purpose of obtaining sexual gratification. The communication was sexually graphic in nature. In addition, the court heard how on August the 29th, 2024, the defendant met or communicated with a girl under 16 on one or more occasions, attempting to meet and intending to do something to or in respect of her during or after the meeting, which, if done, would have constituted sexual activity with the child. John Cooper, prosecuting, said, "The defendant contacted her and engaged in an increasingly sexualised nature. She said on several occasions that she was 14. This is not suitable for this court to deal with." In mitigation, Arthur Ball said the defendant had no previous convictions. The magistrates said, given the serious nature of the offences, which Woodhouse had pleaded guilty to, their sentencing powers were insufficient. They committed him to Norwich Crown Court for sentencing. Woodhouse will be sentenced on March the 9th at Norwich Crown Court. He has been granted conditional bail, which are the same conditions imposed on him by the police. Conditions include not to possess electronic devices with access to the internet and no paid or voluntary work which would put him into contact with anybody under 18.
Norfolk woman has appeared in court after being charged with holding a knife on board on a bus. Alana Pryor, 42, of King's Fisher Close, Bradwell, was charged with possessing a knife blade, sharp-pointed article in a public place. It is alleged that on December the 21st, 2025, she had a serrated black-handled kitchen knife on board the X1 bus in Acol without good reason or lawful authority. Prosecuting Jessica Nekwaya said police received a 999 call from a member of the public that the defendant had the knife to her throat. She was arrested, her bag was searched, and the officers were able to find a kitchen knife. Pryor has also been charged with intentionally, recklessly causing a public nuisance. It is alleged that on January the 13th, she deliberately stood in Mill Road in Bradwell, obstructing the public, intending or being reckless that it would have such a consequence. Ms. Nyquair added she refused to move out of the way. An officer found the defendant standing in the middle of the road. Officers spent a considerable amount of time with the defendant. Pryor did not enter a plea for either of the charges. She has been granted unconditional bail. The cases will be heard in Norwich Crown Court on the 4th of March at 10 o'clock.
A 20-year-old brought to Norfolk from Guinea-Bissau as a teenager launched a surprise attack on his father with a kitchen knife, stabbing him with such ferocity that the weapon broke. Giovanni Ticuda, who hid in the bathroom of his family home to jump out on his parent, continued the attack after the blade snapped, attempting to stab the victim in the eye, as well as his head, back and chest. He was arrested after his sister dialed 999, and officers who were patrolling near their Great Yarmouth home were sent to the scene. Norwich Crown Court heard Ticuda, who is now 21, had a festering anger toward his father, Marcelino, who had brought him to Norfolk in 2018. The hearing was told Marcelino had wanted to support his son and improve his chances of a better life. However, Ticuda, who had been a student at East Norfolk College, was unhappy with where he was living and had a difficult relationship with his father. Andrew Jackson, prosecuting, said Ticuda demonstrated an unhealthy interest in knives and other weapons, searching them out on the internet in the weeks prior to the attack at their Paget Road home in the early hours of May the 20th last year. Mr. Jackson said Ticuda hid in the bathroom before coming out to take his father by surprise and then launched a sustained attack on his parent with a kitchen knife. The prosecutor said such was the ferocity of the attack, the blade broke from its handle. Marcelino sustained a number of stab wounds to the head, although the most serious injury was to his body and resulted in his lungs effectively collapsing. He underwent surgery in hospital, where he remained for at least 2 days. Mr. Jackson said that the defendant had carried out a sustained and violent attack with all the hallmarks of significant planning and premeditation. He said the stab wounds inflicted grave injuries on the victim, who thought he would die. The victim now wants no further contact with the defendant. Following the attack, he will never be able to forget. Ticuda, formerly of Paget Road, Yarmouth, was initially charged with attempted murder, but appeared in court for sentencing on Wednesday, having admitted wounding with intent. Jailing Ticuda for a total of 5 years and 9 months, Judge Andrew Shaw described it as a wicked and ferocious attack. He said it was clear Ticuda had been thinking about the attack, which had an element of revenge to it, for some time. Judge Shaw said, but for the skill of the medical staff who treated his father, may well have died. John Morgan's mitigating said the defendant was just 20 at the time. He said he'd found his father's home to be an unhappy environment. Mr. Morgan said the defendant snapped and insisted there had not been a significant degree of planning or premeditation. He said what took place was so very serious but also very sad, and the end of their relationship as father and son. The court heard it is likely that Tudor will be deported at the end of his custodial sentence.
A woman who grew cannabis on a commercial scale for the London drug market used her legitimate sweet shop business as a cover, the court has heard. Following her arrest in July 2023, police officers found evidence that Sue Geraghty had been growing cannabis and had money from the operation paid into her sweet shop business account, Ipswich Crown Court heard. Police also found that Geraghty had been involved in the supply of cocaine to someone she knew. Geraghty, 54, of Havelock Road, Great Yarmouth, admitted production of cannabis and being involved in the supply of cocaine. She was given a 24-month prison sentence, suspended for 24 months, a 20-day rehabilitation activity requirement, and 109 hours of unpaid work. Sentencing her, Judge Nicola Talbot Hadley said the case crossed the custody threshold but accepted that Geraghty was vulnerable. Other people who were exploiting your good nature persuaded you to get involved. You became caught up in a world that was more scary than you were expecting. And it was difficult to get out of, said the judge. She said Geraghty was arrested after police searched her address and found evidence that cannabis had been grown there. Lynn Shirley, for Geraghty, said her client had mental health issues and had sole care of her children. She said Geraghty had sought help for drug and alcohol abuse.
Ferris wheel faces planning issues. It can be seen as far away as the Acle Strait, but is the view at ground level that has drawn the attention of planners. The observation wheel on Great Yarmouth Seafront could be prevented from running again unless its operator installs public art on hoardings around the base of the attraction. William Abbott, co-owner of Observation Wheel UK Limited, has applied to Great Yarmouth Borough Council to move the 50-metre-high Yarmouth Eye to an area previously used for a slingshot ride. The proposal could see the wheel moved about 50 metres north from land outside the Sea Life Centre to a Borough Council-owned site leased to Observation Wheel UK. While planning officers are recommending councillors approve the application, they are also insisting the wheel should not operate until a public art scheme for the base is approved and installed. The application will be considered by the Borough Council's Development Management Committee on February the 11th. A report prepared ahead of the meeting notes that previous planning permissions for the wheel granted in 2022 and 2024, required public art to be installed on the solid hoardings at the base. However, the graphics were never put in place, leaving what Planet describes as a blank and uninviting temporary appearance in the street scene. Officers are now proposing to impose an almost identical condition as part of the relocation plans. They said further discussions would continue with the applicant and landowners to address concerns that the wheel could have detrimental impact on the character of the area. One neighbouring resident has objected to the plans, citing concerns over privacy, loss of sea views and reduced light. Mr. Abbott is seeking permission to occupy the new site for 4 years, from March the 1st this year until February the 28th, 2030. The wheel would be installed alongside a supporting structure, including decking, ramp access and a ticket office. The wheel, which has been on Yarmouth Seafront since May 2022, is an almost entirely steel structure and carries 36 gondolas.
New electric buses are being rolled out across more routes in Norfolk. Work to convert the first bus depot in Great Yarmouth for electric vehicles is underway. It comes as part of a wider £13.8 million project funded by both First Bus and Norfolk County Council. Simon Matheson, Managing Director of First Bus East of England, said, "The transformation of Roundtree Way in Norwich showed what can be achieved when strong partnerships come together, with £37.2 million invested through Zebra funding, Norfolk County Council and First Bus. This next phase of investment, supported by funding and our own continued commitment, allows us to bring the benefits of electric buses to Great Yarmouth and more communities as well across Norfolk. The work at the site in Caister Road will support the introduction of 10 electric buses on the number 8 service connecting James Paget University Hospital with Caister via the town centre. The project also includes the installation of a high-power charging infrastructure, with the new buses expected to be operational by autumn." Graham Plant, Cabinet Member for Highways, Infrastructure and Transport at Norfolk County Council, added, "This investment demonstrates how our bus service improvement plan is helping to deliver real, visible improvements for passengers. By working in partnership with First Bus, we're reducing emissions, improving air quality, and supporting the transition to a cleaner, more sustainable bus network across Norfolk."
Nicky Calder was just 25 when he died, leaving behind his heartbroken family, including his wife and one-year-old son. A victim of the infected blood scandal, he was a small child when he contracted hepatitis C and HIV as a result of receiving contaminated blood products to treat his haemophilia. Now his mother and brother have come together to honour him. The pair are part of Silence to Song, a choir for victims impacted by the devastating tragedy. The scandal involved the contamination of blood products, which in turn led to thousands being infected with HIV and hepatitis. From the 1970s to the early 1990s, more than 30,000 people in the UK were infected with hepatitis B, hepatitis C and HIV due to receiving contaminated blood or blood products, primarily sourced from the United States. Many of these products were used to treat patients with haemophilia and others who required blood transfusions. Nicky was himself a sufferer from haemophilia and he died in 1999. Now the choir has brought out its debut single, Together We Rise, written by his older brother and choir member Darren Calder in honour of his brother. Their mother Rosemary, aged 77, also sings in the choir. Darren, who lives in Caister near Great Yarmouth and spent his younger years working as a singer and performer, said, "I joined the choir because for many years during the campaigning and public inquiry I couldn't find the strength to be involved. But the choir is more than I could ever have imagined. I found comfort in being surrounded by people who felt the same suffering and understand my pain. I then found myself able to find my voice. I wrote our song as a message to anyone who has been in a dark place, feeling lost and alone. When you're with others who understand, you can find the strength to come out of the darkness and into the light. Together We Rise is an uplifting song reflecting suffering but also joy of a community coming together to find something positive out of the shared painful experience. It launched on Friday, January the 30th.
Rules around dog ownership could be set for renewal in Great Yarmouth with new restrictions on where pets can roam. Great Yarmouth Borough Council has launched a public consultation on whether to extend and update its Public Spaces Protection Order, PSPO. It was first introduced in 2017 to help tackle fouling and improve dog control in public areas. The existing order requires owners to pick up after their pets, keep dogs on leads in specified locations, and prohibits dogs from entering certain areas, including children's play zones. Councillor Paul Wells, portfolio holder for Environment and Sustainability Licensing and Waste at Great Yarmouth Borough Council, GYBC, said, "The majority of dog owners are considerate and responsible. However, we have a small minority of people who spoil our communities by not picking up dog mess or who don't control their pets properly. The order has been successfully running for a number of years and enables us to take action against those who insist on being inconsiderate or, worse, cause a danger to others. The council is inviting feedback from individuals, landowners and organisations to help decide whether to continue the order. Feedback via the survey will provide important information as the council considers renewing the order," Mr. Wells added. Under the Antisocial Behaviour, Crime and Policing Act 2014, the PSPO must be renewed every 3 years and is due to expire this spring. If renewed, the order will remain largely unchanged, but would introduce a new requirement for dogs to be kept on leads in the marketplace. This follows several reports that people who have been worried by dogs running free there. Anyone found breaching the PSPO could be issued with a fine.
A man stopped by police for driving with no insurance was uncovered as a drug dealer with two burner phones and more than £3,000 in cash at his home. William McCoob had been spotted by police driving in Great Yarmouth, and Norwich Crown Court heard that the 31-year-old was pulled over by police as it was suspected he had no insurance. Jude Dewar, prosecuting, said McCombe, who had no third-party insurance, was found with a lock knife in his car. Following a search of the vehicle, McCombe was also discovered to have a burner phone in the car as well as wraps of drugs and a small quantity of cannabis. Mr. Dewar said another burner phone, as well as further amounts of drugs and quantities of cash, £170 and £3,380, were also found at his house. McCombe of Cromwell Close Martham, near Great Yarmouth, appeared at court on Tuesday, February 3rd, after admitting possession with intent to supply cocaine. He also admitted possession of a lock knife, possession of cannabis and driving without insurance. Jailing him for 33 months, recorder Nicola Fitches said, "Class A drugs spread misery and exploit the vulnerable." Rob Bollington, mitigating, said McCombe turned to drugs following the deaths of two very close family members. Having got himself into drugs, Mr. McCombe fell into debt at the behest of others, he said, and that McCombe had let his family down by getting involved in drugs, but was committed to change.
Archaeological digs are set to take place on the site of a major scheme to build more than 600 homes. Permission Homes Anglia has submitted an archaeological written scheme of investigation, WSI, to carry out archaeological work before Phase 2 and Phase 3 of its housing project on land at Nova Scotia Farm, west of Jack Chase Way in Caister. Outline planning permission for up to 665 homes was granted by Borough Council in May 2023. A condition of the planning permission relates to the management of the potential archaeological impact of the development and assessing the archaeological potential of the site. Phase two of the scheme will see the construction of up to 260 dwellings, with phase three providing for up to 228 dwellings. Archaeological work within the phase one area was detailed in a WSI prepared in January 2023 and carried out later that year. The initial phase of the works will be based on excavating trial trenches within the phase two and phase three areas. From this, a detailed assessment of the site's archaeological potential will be informed, and any need for further work within the development site will be determined. The informative trial trenching will be undertaken by an archaeological team from Pre-Construct Archaeology, PCA. The trial trenches is expected to take about 5 weeks to complete. Results will be reported within 6 weeks of the end of the fieldwork. Project manager and daily supervision of the site will be carried out by qualified archaeologists with experience of local soil and geological conditions. The archaeological background to the site was originally reviewed in an assessment submitted with the planning application. The development site is located close to a Roman fort and its associated settlement. In its assessed as having moderate to high potential for yet to be discovered evidence of prehistoric and Roman archaeological features and deposits.
Well, that's the news for this week, but there's more as we welcome you to Grapevine Extra. Sweet shops and panto memories in just a tick. First, though, a couple of late entries to Vision Norfolk's list for February. Yes, a couple of extra events from Vision Norfolk. This coming Monday, the 9th, the Yarmouth Hub is hosting Tea and Tech, featuring a blind shell demo, plus a chance to look at other smartphones. This is happening between 10 a.m. and 12 noon. And forward to Friday the 27th, and you can experience a tech drop-in with Humanware and Optilec between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Contact the Hub for any further details on 01493 745 973 and talk to Catherine. OK, it's over to the ladies.
Well, here we go on our harking back time. I know we all love a little bit of nostalgia. I keep saying that, but we all do, so we have to admit it. And this lovely article that I want to share with our listeners is by Emma Brennan in the Harking Back series of the Eastern Daily Press. And she starts with a wonderful two-page pictures of all sorts of things. And the heading is, Remember All Those Jars Filled with Magical Sugary Delights? Well, yes, I think we do. There's a picture here of a beautiful shop, which I think Margaret's going to enlighten us about later on. It's a beautiful shop with loads and loads of jars, great big jars, and shelves full of sweets, and there's some of the assorted toffees, pineapple chunks, sugared almonds, ginger creams, all manner of wonderful delights for us that we remember, and particularly a picture of these little things. They're not torpedoes. We've just discussed this. Julie said, are they licorice torpedoes? No, they're called comfits. Comfits. That's it. We're Emma's grandfather's favourite. So I'm going to just read you her article, share it with you, and then we'll all have a little chip in and see what we can all remember. Emma gets her teeth into tantalising topic of sweets. Despite growing up in the 1970s, when being wired by exposure to too many E numbers was also mandatory, I've never had a particularly sweet tooth. Chocolate and licorice are the only exceptions these days, but as a kid with only a meagre amount of weekly pocket money to eke out, I coveted classmates' crisps and savoury snacks more than their Coca-Cola cubes. But the older I've got, the more fondly I look back at the sweet shops of yesteryear and lament their demise and replacement with online alternatives. Yes, I applaud and even use internet businesses peddling old-fashioned sweets, particularly if I want to buy a suitably retro gift for a former school friend. But to me, online shopping will never top the memory of walking into a shop, pocket money in hand, to choose from the dozens of jars of temptingly coloured and colourful treats lining the shelves. The saying, like a kid in a sweet shop, to illustrate being bamboozled by multiple options, is a very apt one indeed. There was something rather magical about taking your time to make your choice, seeing the sweets weighed out on good old-fashioned scales before being tipped into a paper bag. It seemed as though you got a lot of sweets in a quarter pound. Now we are returning to the idea of paper bags as an alternative to everything being packaged in plastic. But it wasn't all good. In the 1970s, if you kept your... If you kept your boiled sweets in your pocket, or better still, clutched the bag in both your hot hands for fear of someone else getting their mitts on them, the sweets would become overly sticky and adhere themselves to the paper. I find cough sweets do that. Do you find that, Margaret? You've got a heck of a job to undo them, haven't you? I was never a greedy child. I was never a greedy child, though preferring to treat my grandparents and share the enjoyment. The lady who owned the village shop was a kind soul and recognised a kindred spirit in me, so she would usually, accidentally, pour an extra ounce or two of sweets into the scales pan, especially if she knew they were for Grandad. Licorice was the go-to sweet of choice for both my dad and my granddad, so I would often save up my pocket money, cycle down to the local shop, buy Grandad a quarter of licorice comfits, and then proudly present them to him. However many times I did this, he would always look suitably thrilled, making all the right noises from surprise to delight. He would, of course, let me dive into the bag whilst retaining a firm grip on the majority of the content, and I would pick out a red one, which I pretended was lipstick. If you licked it so the colouring coating came away and you looked as though you were really smart. I'm sure, she says, they were also full of other 1970 nasties, which made this a bad idea, but it was innocent fun. Mum, who was a child in the 1940s, recalls her local sweet shop herself. She said, we always used to ask Mum to bring sweets on a Thursday when she visited her relatives in a nearby village. Sometimes she did, but mostly she didn't, so she rarely had the money. On occasion, we went to the shop with Mum, and I can still picture all of the jars of sweets on one side and cigarettes on the other. We used to like bullseyes, black and white peppermint boiled sweets, or anything that we get our hands on, to be honest. We had very little sweet stuff in those days, but that was probably better for our health. This particular shop was still there some 30 years later, when we were children. We would, if we were lucky, stop on the way to our aunt's house on a Sunday, because this type of shop, which also sold newspapers, was exempt from Sunday trading restrictions. We would craze Dad to get us a quarter of Merry Maid caramels. Oh, I remember them. They were absolutely gorgeous. They got this little picture on, hadn't they? Yeah, I remember that. Merry Maid caramels, which were wrapped in paper and tasted oh so very creamy. They added delight of this particular store, and that the owner had a large golden retriever who greeted customers enthusiastically with a friendly bark. My sister and I affectionately renamed it the Woofy Dog Shop as a result. Another favourite sweet of ours was Rainbow Drops, which were essentially chocolate, probably flavoured, but buttons covered in hundreds and thousands. My sister would pretend to eat all of hers, so I followed suit. It wasn't until my bag was empty that she revealed she'd still got half of hers left. So she would then get me to pretend to be the Woofy Dog, and I would sit on the floor begging for chalk drops. We laughed a lot about this in later life, not least because I always fell for it, no matter how many times she tricked me. When we were in middle school, we would walk to local shops and at lunchtime and buy Tom Thumb Pips, tiny fruit-flavoured boiled sweets, of which you received hundreds in a quarter. Of course, the knock-on effect was that we ate them by the handful instead of one at a time. At one point, I recall a rather soapy-flavoured version, which none of us liked, so we put them to good use. We all sat along the playground bank behind the football pitch and took it in turns to see how far we could spit the Tom Thumb Pips. I know it's disgusting, really, but we were kids, and getting up to no good was how we amused ourselves, long before the internet possessed us all. That's very true. We actually did. We received huge plaudits if we managed to hit the top of the goalpost, and heroic status should the tiny sugar bombs stick to the frame. And then, when I progressed to upper school, I recall an incident that cured me of my partiality to jelly sweets. During a school trip on the 1980s, our religious studies class was bused to London to visit St. Paul's Cathedral. Due to neither my friend nor I having any head for heights, we managed to wriggle out of the compulsory trek up to St. Paul's Whispering Gallery, and we escaped to a nearby sweet shop. We pooled our finances and purchased a whole pound of midget gems. Needless to say, by the time we had trenched through most of them during the 3-hour bus journey, both we felt quite sick. Arrived at our destination very green round the gills and never looked at a midget gem again. And then she asks, do you remember shopping for sweets in jars at your local shop? Do you have a favourite sweet for your youth? Let me know. And this is a lovely article. We've got some more pictures up here. Consuming a full pound of midget gems. That's right, that's what she did. They are little tiny things, aren't they? And then rainbow drops, chocolate buttons covered in hundreds and thousands. How lovely was that? Right, OK, girls, now what do you remember about these sort of things?
The sweet shop that I remember when I was a little tiny girl, 10 to 15 minutes away from my grandparents' bungalow, and it seemed like an absolutely enchanted place. It really did. And that was very soon after the end of World War II. And I know sweets was probably severely rationed at the time, but I don't actually remember going short of much. This particular sweet shop also had a small lending library, but if there's time, a little bit more about that later. But what I particularly remember is my first visit to the shop alone. And I would have been about 6 years old. How times have changed. But there was no danger. It was just a straightforward walk along the pavements with houses on one side and a road on the other side. There was the nearest thing to anything being dangerous was a garage forecourt that I had to cross, but it wasn't dangerous. I mean, there was the odd car in and out, but I knew all about having to be careful, and so I did the best I could. There was no danger, and I do remember that the shop at that time was run or owned, I suppose, by a very, very pleasant chap. By his name, I would imagine he was probably Irish. And I know that I went there with a sixpence and I had to buy a threepenny vanilla wafer and something else, must have been about twopence, and I was given a penny change to take home, which I carried home very, very carefully. It was a lovely place, it really was. But the new owner was a very, very different character to the Irish chap. He was a bit of a sardonic sort of character. And came one evening, fairly soon after he took the place over, I believe, when I was in bed and I heard the doorbell ring. And there were voices. And I felt very tempted to get up and listen. But I thought, well, perhaps I better not. But although I did listen. But it turned out that this chap had taken over the shop, and having taken it over, he thought he'd taken over a little bit more than he could deal with. So he'd come round to seek my mother's help, because previously she had worked there, and she knew all the tricks of the trade and how things went at that shop, so she went back for a while. And then later, a very pleasant elderly couple, they took over. And that they decided that the lending library was an absolute mess. And Mum was still working there. So Mum announced dramatically that if she was going to reorganise the lending library, she'd sort it all out down to the very last book. And I was by then old enough to be allowed to help, although I'm not sure how much help I was, because I think I was probably seeking out and reading books that perhaps I wasn't supposed to read. But yeah, anyway... That's kids for you, isn't it? And but an added attraction was the fact that there was the sweetest little ginger kitten in a basket up a corner. And it turned out by all sorts of devious routes that later on, when that little ginger kitten was a fairly elderly ginger cat, we adopted him and he adopted us. And that was most extraordinary. But, yes, it was a wonderful place, and it was interesting to hear all the names of the sweets, you know, that that Dusty was just first talking about from the newspaper article. I particularly loved sherbet lemons and I loved sherbet fountains. Mm. They were my absolute favourite.
Oh, yes, sherbet fountain, yes.
And lovely, and that's right.
Yeah, and those ones with the licorice straw.
Oh, yes, and anything with licorice, that was absolutely it, yes. And I remember on one particular occasion, there was something I spotted on one of the shelves when I was then there with my mother that I wanted. You can't have that, she said, it's half a crown.
There was a lot of money there.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. I think it was a box of something that were called Melchior's fruits.
They still make them, don't they?
Yes.
Crystallised jelly things.
Yes, that's right, yes.
They have a middle, and used to suck out the little bit of juice in the middle, didn't they?
Yes, yes, they were the ones that we used to buy for Annie, yeah, yes, yes. But, no, I mean, I loved that place. I really did.
So, where was that shop, Margaret, exactly?
Yes, it was... you remember where... before they put the bypass in, it was where Springfield Road opened out onto the old Lowestoft Road. Mm. And there's a Chinese restaurant... Mr Wang's Chinese restaurant is near there now.
Oh, right, yeah, okay.
Yes, that was the place. It was called the Sprig of Heather. Mm.
That's why there's still the Sprig of
Heather. And it's still called the
Forest.
Yes, on the Florist, yes. Mm. Yes. But, I mean, they were the years after World War II, but, I mean, I don't think we ever felt deprived. You know, we had all these lovely little things. Mm. Yes. It was very, very nice.
Well, I'm a bit boring when it comes to sweets, aren't I?
Yes, you are boring when it comes to cake and sweets.
Yeah, I mean, I was very, very lucky in as much as... I don't think I thought I was lucky then, but now I realise I am lucky. My mother didn't give me sweets. And that my treat on a Saturday when we went to see my grandmother... was a small Milky Bar, you know, Milky Bar kids, you know, like Milky Bars are on me. And but we did have, because I lived in Norwich until I was nine, early nine, and I used to go on my roller skates, my little Jacko roller skates that you strapped onto your shoes, and we talked about those the other day, or on my scooter. And I used to go to this little shop, and it had a wooden floor and this lovely wooden fronted counter with, like you say, the weighing machine and everything. And all of these sweets in these beautiful, tall, sort of squarish jars. Yes, right. And so that all the labels faced you. And all these wonderful colours. And I used to just enjoy looking at them. I just loved looking at them, all the colours and everything. But it didn't do anything for me.
No.
Yes, I remember the sherbet fountain with the licorice. Yes. Daddy used to like humbugs. Were they the red and white ones?
Well, humbugs were the red and white ones. These were the other ones, the black and white ones.
Oh, right.
Black and white or brown and white humbugs.
Yeah, were they?
Yeah, they were brown and white.
Yeah, well, he used to like those.
Were they clove?
He liked the clovey ones.
Shop for 20 years.
Well, you should know. You should know.
We had jars.
Did you? Yeah, well, tell us about it.
Where was it?
Oh, it's in Babel. Just at the end of Crab Lane, we had.
Did you?
We might have been last basis to still have jars around because we had them all the way into early 2000s. We still had jars.
Brilliant.
Sugared almonds, yes, they were good.
They were my mother's favourite.
Chocolate caramels, yes.
Oh, right.
Well, licorice, all sorts.
Of course, yes.
Oh, wonderful. Right.
I've still got one of those jars, haven't I?
You have.
I keep my bird seed in it.
I've actually got half a dozen tucked away in the cupboard somewhere.
Cause I think Mummy used to keep her flower in one.
Yes.
Yeah,
they're lovely. Yes. So, come on, what else did you used to
Anything
get?
Else to say, Julie? Was that it for today?
I've got a...
Got a bit, have you?
Yeah.
Okay. Later on.
But nothing about sweeties.
Right.
So... we've just finished pantomime season, and every year in January my parents used to take me to the pantomime, and I found this little story actually in a book that Dusty gave me for Christmas, and the book was called The Virgin Mary's Got Knits. Now, I know it's an awful title. But the opening of the book basically is about a school inspector, really, and this school inspector has been invited to go to the nativity.
He's very famous.
Yeah, oh, he is. Yeah. Anyway, he was invited to go to this school nativity, and on his way there, he met all these children coming back. And he said, where are you going? And they said, well, we're going home. And he said, but I've come to see the nativity play. And they said, oh, it's off, he said. So he said, why is that? He said, well, Virgin Mary's got knits. Okay, so that's why the book was called The Virgin. Absolutely nothing to do with pantomime at all. But anyway, so this is a recollection of his childhood memory about pantomime, which I've added a little bit to be fair. So every January, my parents would take me to the pantomime. And I don't know whether you knew, but pantomime was first introduced to England by the Italians. I always thought it was an English thing, but it was brought to the England by the Italians in the 17th century.
Commedia dell'art.
Pardon?
Commedia dell'art.
Yeah, but it wasn't panto as we know it then, was it? So,
Where it originated.
And it began to evolve from the Harlequins into the pantomime tradition as we know it today. And I just love the pantomimes with their plots and where good always triumphed and the outrageous cross-dressing characters, the doggerel and the ridiculously silly jokes and play on words and the foolish antics and the bright colours and the spectacularly gaudy costumes, the lively music and the audience participation, where you were encouraged to shout out as loud as you could. You're not allowed to do that in theatres, are you? But at a pantomime, you can. So, I mean, even to rattle a sweetie paper is not good in a show, is it? So, it's a remarkable fact that these pantomimes have survived until present day, despite all the modern media technology. Now, everything about this over-the-top theatrical genre appeals to children, and I put in here, and adults alike, because I think we all love a pantomime. And particularly when things go wrong, which they frequently do, and if they do, this is an added bonus. I was never frightened by the wicked witch or the cruel stepmother, the villainous King Rat, or the scheming sheriff of Nottingham, because I had met these characters in the stories my parents had read to me, and I knew in my heart that they would eventually get their comeuppance. It was great fun, however, watching screaming children terrified by the baddie being hauled from their seats and taken out by their embarrassed parents. It is an old theatrical chestnut. Never act with animals or children. We know that, he does. Both are, of course, entirely unpredictable. Once, so my father reminds me, although I have to admit I can't remember, so it might be one of his tall tales, that the Shetland pony harnessed to Cinderella's crystal coach, which was a large, round, pumpkin-shaped cardboard cutout, made an appearance on the stage amidst delighted oohs and ahs from the audience. Just as Cinderella emerged from her magical carriage in her shimmering silver dress and sparkling glass slippers, the pony decided it was a good time to relieve itself. The contents of the creature's bladder splashed onto the floor and then trickled across the stage, into the orchestra pit and onto the piano, much to the alarm of the pianist and the amusement of the audience and the actors. Buttons, with great presence of mind, disappeared and returned a moment later with a mop and the lines. Goodness gracious, dearie me, Cinder's pony's done a pee. I do remember, however, the time when Buttons tried his hardest to get the little boy who sat in the middle of the front row to respond. We were at the end of the row, so had a clear view. The six-year-old stared at the action on the stage with a deadpan expression, refusing when everyone else was cheering and booing, shouting and singing. Every actor tried to get the child to react. Cinderella, the fairy godmother, the wicked stepmother, the ugly sisters, Baron Hardup, all to no avail. So Buttons saw this as a personal challenge. He would run onto the stage with, "Hi, kids!" And all the children would shout back, "Hi, Buttons!" All that is except the child sitting in the middle of the front row with the impassive expression. Buttons began to look pointedly at the child. "I get really upset if children don't say, 'Hi, Buttons,'" he said sadly. "Ah," commiserated the audience. "And there's a little boy on the front row who hasn't said it yet." "Ah," chorused the audience again. Still, there was no response from the child. So Buttons left the stage, skipped down the steps leading to the auditorium and, taking the child's hand, managed to prevail him up to join him on the stage with a promise of a present. "Now, little boy," he asked, "what's your name?" The child stared at him in silence. Button tried another tack. "Are you having a good time?" Still, there was no response. Buttons persevered. "Have you anything to say to Buttons?" And little boy looked up and he replied in a deadpan voice, "Does an ass summit? There's bloomin' daft thee," and returned to his seat. On another occasion, Simple Simon asked for some children to join him on the stage. From the sea of waving hands, he selected an angelic-looking little boy of about six. The child duly joined the actor on stage and was given the microphone. "Now you entertain the audience while I am gone," Simple Simon told the child.
The idea was that the child, standing in the centre of the stage, nervous and alone, and not knowing what to do, would generate a deal of laughter from the audience as he looked around nervously. Simple Simon had picked the wrong child. The little boy, not at all disconcerted by the full theatre, suddenly went into a stage act to rival the best stand-up comedian, and much to the delight of the very appreciative audience. I say, began the child. I got an empty box last Christmas. My dad said it was an Action Man deserter kit. And he carried on. My dad treated my mum to plastic surgery this year for Christmas. He cut up her credit card. And there was great round of applause. And the boy went on. I told my dad I got my eye on a bike for Christmas, and he told me to keep my eye on it because I wasn't going to get my bum on it. A flustered Simple Simon reappeared on the stage and grabbed the microphone from the budding comedian. Thank you very much, little boy, he said, laughing half-heartedly. I'm not finished, protested the little child, attempting to get back possession of the microphone. Oh, yes, you have, said Simple Simon, escorting him off the stage. Oh, no, he hasn't, chorused the audience. My father told me another occasion when the actor playing the pantomime dame collapsed in the interval and had to be taken to Moorgate Hospital. The theatre manager appeared before the curtain prior to the commencement of the second act to announce the actor playing the part of Dame Trot will not be appearing in the second half. He's been taken ill. So the audience and great chorus shouted, "Oh, no, he hasn't." So the manager replied, "Yes, yes, he has." In all seriousness, "Oh, no, he hasn't," the audience shouted. "Oh, yes, he has," shouted the manager angrily. Now, I could go on, but I'm going to finish now.
Oh,
no, I'm not. Where are you lot?
Oh, yes, you are.
I'm finished.
I'll tell you what, I had a better experience than your little fella who weed on the, what's it, the animal, because I was directing the said pantomime.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be my job. Nobody else would do it. I had to go, we had matinees as well, and in between times I had to go and shovel up what the set animal had done.
Oh, well, there you go. Good for your roses,
yeah,
sweetheart.
But, yeah, you just killed my line, thank you. They were very good roses that year.
Oh, dear.
Everything that happens in life can happen in a show. You can make them laugh. You can make them cry. Anything, anything can go. The clown with his pants falling down, or the dance that's a dream of romance, or the scene where the villain is mean, that's entertainment.
The lights on the lady in tights,
or the bride with the guy on the side,
or the ball where she gives him her all, that's entertainment.
The plot can be hot, simply teeming with sex,
a gay divorcee who is after her ex.
It could be Oedipus Rex,
where a chap kills his father and causes a lot of bother.
The clerk who is thrown out of work
by the boss, who is thrown for a loss
by the skirt, who is doing him dirt.
The world is a stage. The stage is a world of entertainment. Show that is really a show sends you out with a kind of a glow, and you say as you go on your way, that's entertainment. A song that is winging along, or a dance
With a touch of romance is the art that appeals to the heart. That's entertainment. Admit we're a hit and we'll go on from there. We play the charade that was lighter than air. A good old-fashioned affair. As we sing this finale, we hope it was up your alley. No death like you get in Macbeth. No ordeal like the end of Camille. This goodbye brings a tear to the eye. The world is the stage. The stage is a world of entertainment.
Well, that's it for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2026 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Next week, we have a repeat performance from Dusty, Margaret and Julie. So, we look forward to your company for that. But, in the meantime, we wish you a good week and hope that you stay safe and well. And from all your friends at Grapevine, it's bye for now.